Next is a meeting with disciples given on January 19th, 1996 in Srivrindavan Dham.
Chapter 7, God's glories and holy names.
He talks that Lord Chaitanya related he had had with his spiritual master, Ishwara Puri. And so here in Vrindavan we've had maybe 5 or 6 disciples meetings. And the seminar, last class in the seminar today. So one thing I wanted to express my appreciation for all the devotees coming to these meetings. Some of you are staying on for the festival, but some of you are going right back after the month. So I appreciate that you've come to be with me. And in reciprocation, I want to give you Krishna consciousness. We don't have just a casual relationship. It's as Prabhupada says when he answered that young man, Dr. Mishra's, he had to choose the right guru, he said, because it's a great responsibility, both for the disciple and spiritual master. So I want to give you Krishna consciousness in whatever ways I can in our relationship. Sometimes I feel unworthy, as we all should, actually. But especially this obligation has such a high standard expected both from the Shastra and from the devotees themselves. Sometimes I try to express some of that too to you, my feelings, and I'm especially able to do that when I write in my private hours, but then we share some of that writing and publishing. I try to express things in honesty about the relationship. Of course, basically, I accept that that we're functioning, that I'm representing Srila Prabhupada, and that this is a bona fide relationship in reciprocal succession. For me personally, the counter propaganda which it attacks ISKCON, that there's no real spiritual masters after Prabhupada, that only he initiates. For me, that somehow serves the purpose of arousing my conviction that it is bona fide. Sometimes counter movements serve that purpose. Sometimes they disturb and weaken a conclusion, and sometimes they serve to actually strengthen it. So I may feel, sometimes I may express something that I feel unworthy, and then somebody of that viewpoint will say, yes, this shows that you are unworthy, and that's why you're doubting. Then I hear that, I immediately think, no, I'll never accept what you say. It's a different thing to say I'm unworthy than you're saying. So this can be expressed in writing, but when we come together, it's also a very special meeting, as much as we can, and doing things together is memorable. So I'm only sorry that I can't do more when we do come together because of my health limits. But fortunately, as I said, in the time we've been together, we have been able to meet quite a bit. But I'm going to be leaving tomorrow. The pressure has built up of the obligations that I have, the meetings and classes, and being here with so many of you and with the seminar. I certainly would you would expect, and I would expect participation, and somehow it's built up so that I feel I need to take a little health break before I go on in my travels, because the headache syndrome has been increasing, so that, as you notice, I don't go to anything at all except the seminar to make sure that I can do that. Well, one purpose of this meeting was just to announce that my meeting. But I'd like to talk some more about the topics I was speaking on. So our relationship is expressed in the philosophy that everybody knows, that sometimes we're together, and that's called vapu association, and sometimes vani association, and separation. Where are we? There's nobody there to associate with in person, but we associate with his instructions. You know the basic philosophy that I'll speak about a little personally. There's a relative value assigned to these two, and Prabhupada always makes it clear that the vapu, because it is temporary and not maybe there and then it's not there, for that reason it's less important. It doesn't mean that being together is not important in live exchanges, but because if it's so important that it must be always there, then that's a very shaky, untenable position, because it can't be always there. There was one little exchange in affection. One of Prabhupada's disciples, Guru Das in Vrindavan, said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I always want to stay at your lotus feet." And Prabhupada said, "Oh, that's very difficult." He said, "My feet are always moving." So it's not possible, but the vani is always there. It's always steady. And nowadays, even enhanced by all kinds of technology of sound tapes, and even they have video, and what we're more interested in is the books also. And those, in a sense, they are spiritual, but and they're paraphernalia of connection, but it actually has to be done in the heart and the mind and the consciousness, and kept there and practiced and followed. Or we can say in the devotee's life, it's carried out, the vani is carried out, embodied in the disciple's life. And just like the great devotee is called Golavani, Gola Shakti, because he carries within him the message of or the personification of Gaura, Lord Chaitanya, or his spiritual master. So he carries the vani. There's a description of a Prabhupada, the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple. He says, as I was saying, I feel the responsibility to try to give you Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says how this is done. He's saying that the disciple gets his knowledge by the mercy of the spiritual master, not by the disciple's big brain. That even if he doesn't have a big brain, he can still get the knowledge because it comes from the dependent more or less on the mercy of the spiritual master. But the process should not, however, be misunderstood to be something like magical feats whereby the spiritual master acts like a magician and injects spiritual knowledge into his disciple as if surcharging him with an electrical current. The bona fide spiritual master reasonably explains everything to the disciple on the authorities of Vedic wisdom. The disciple can receive such knowledge not exactly intellectually, but by submissive inquiries and a service attitude. I always like that phrase. There seems to be so much in it. Not exactly intellectually. Think of our school days when the teacher would write something on the board and then you would write it down in your notebooks. And then you'd write it again on your exam paper back to him. So it was just like intellectual currency or stuff that was passed back and forth. And you knew it entirely in a theoretical way. If you could just hold it in your brain or write it down intellectually. So the spiritual master speaks reasonably. The disciple understands reasonably. But it's not exactly just intellect. Something more, and that is the spiritual master being pleased, Krishna being pleased, because it's revelation, it's vijnana, it's realization, faith, sort of thing that's beyond material intellect or merely intellect. So in Vaishnava Smriti and Siddhanta, the spiritual master has a very high place. Sakshat Hari Krina Samasta Shastra. I heard Prabhupada talking just this morning. He was lecturing from a verse where Draupadi refers to Drona as Drona Bhagavan. Drona is the guru. So Prabhupada says this is right. And then he refers to another verse. Arche Vishnu Shiladir Guru Su Naramatir Vaishnava Jati Budi. If anyone thinks that the deity is made of stone, and then he speaks quite a bit about that. And this is a lecture in 1976 in Vrindavan. He refers to the deities here. He says, everybody knows that we procured these deities in Jaipur and that they're made of marble. Then here is Gorni Thai. No, first he said that it is Krishna Balaram and Archavigraha and Gorni Thai, and he said Radha Krishna. So everybody knows they're made of stone, but thousands of people come to this temple. Are they all fools and rascals to see a statue, an idol? No, he says. It's a system. And then he goes on to say, I think I put this at once in one of my found poems. He says, everybody knows that at Jagannath Puri, Lord Jagannath is made of wood. Sometimes Prabhupada says oud. But they're all thousands, lakhs of people are going to see Jagannath. Everybody knows that Balaji, referring to the deity in Tirupati, is made of stone. That's all many people go to see him. So he's Archavigraha. And those who don't accept Archivigraha, like the Arya Samaj, now, there's nobody cares for them, Prabhupada said. In other words, all the people, they still come and worship the deity, and it will always go on, no matter what people say against it. And then he went on to say there are 8 kinds of deities, jewels and wood and brass and stone and so on, including the mind. The yogi worships in the mind, and the deity worship in the temple is the same. It's not imagination. It's Krishna who agrees to come in this form, the only form we can see at present with our conditioned eyes. But his real point in speaking all that was to get on to the next part. Arche Vishnu Shiladir Gurusu. So similarly, the spiritual master is not an ordinary person, and so you should not envy the spiritual master. As soon as you do, you fall down, he said. And the spiritual master is like a viceroy for the king. Whatever you offer him, he doesn't accept for sense gratification, but he gives it to Krishna. So your service goes to Krishna, to the spiritual master, and what he speaks comes from Krishna. So he's just serving as an instrument. So this is the parampara since time immemorial. And the one who is the disciple, who gets trained, he becomes spiritual master in the future. Well, I have picked one of the excerpts. I don't think we'll reach it today. Well, Prabhupada is asking his Lower East Side audience to all become spiritual masters. I played a tape in Mayapur to the devotees in the room, and Prabhupada is saying, the student is not that he perpetually remains student, but he must become guru. He said, in any line of work, the critically trained student, he becomes the professor, or he becomes the teacher, that's the system. But it is is nevertheless awkward to assume that one is all these big titles, Acharya, Guru, and so on, worshipable, and at the same time to feel humble, as lower than a blade of grass, and to actually be at least basically situated and able to discharge these duties without hypocrisy and without taking pride, without becoming complacent, without enjoying the services given by the disciples. Without thinking oneself special. So when I do get the opportunity to write, and even to read on my own, when I'm with you in a place like this, or if I'm somewhere and we're not all together, these times, reading and hearing and examining oneself, they're very good for integrity of understanding my actual relationship with Prabhupada and Lord Krishna, just like I wrote 2 books of that kind of examination. Here is Srila Prabhupada, where I tried to understand my actual relationship with Prabhupada, not just official, and my relationship with Lord Krishna, which he just published as a little book. Therefore, when I'm not with you, I feel as much or even more, not less, that I'm still discharging the responsibility of this relationship, which is to make myself fit for this kind of interaction, so I can be a transparent media or a link to Prabhupada and Krishna. And the written record of these times, I hope serves, I was going to say, as a combination of Vapu and Vani, but that's a little confusing expression, but I would say at least by the writing I try to provide a personal form of Vani, so that it's not just the same teachings you could find in the book anyway, exactly that way, but spoken by a person, just the way Sukadeva Goswami is called the parrot, not because he repeated things exactly, but because of his ability to make something sweeter. That the parrot has this proclivity to make fruit sweeter when he pecks it. So it becomes personal vani. About my writing, I'm trying to study Srimad Bhagavatam and appreciate it and repeat it, but at the same time to give personal thoughts, and that kind of mixture has been what I've been writing for years, and I'm trying to develop that into a kind of form of expression. And I feel grateful when devotees appreciate it. Got some thoughtful appreciations while I was here. I just got a letter from Rupa Raghunath. He likes to read my books. He also likes to help print them. He printed some of the first Chota books, and is now coming forward to very much to help print the new books. Of course, I'm saying this in the presence of our biggest supporter, Swami Rishi. So he was saying he likes to read the books. He said, but I must apply these books in my life, otherwise it's just some interesting reading for a leisure hour. So I hope the books are interesting, but yes, that wouldn't be sufficient if they just provided you, sometimes when Prabhupada's books are too heavy to read or you're a little too tired, that it provides you some entertainment or leisure hour reading. But it has to be applied. So he is hoping to do that. And I got a letter yesterday from Shamananda, who had just finished reading the newest book, My Relationship with Lord Krishna. And he said that in many ways this book really confronts the reader with the same thing that I was confronting in myself. The challenges as to why we don't go further in our personal relationship with the Lord, and it seems that we almost don't want to see what's blocking us, and so many things I was trying to ask myself. And he said that you just can't read this book and put it aside like a pastime of some casual reading, but you get confronted with these things in your own relationship with Krishna. So when you read so thoughtfully and take to it, then it's I feel encouraged that this is also our association. And many of you know that is such an important part of our association. I remember when a devotee from Newcastle, Bhakta Brian, asked me some years ago if he could take initiation from me, and I said I don't want to initiate very much anymore. At that time I was initiating, but not so much. But I said, you have to consider that I'm not going to come to your place, and so how can you have a spiritual master who you don't meet? If you really think about this. And so he was insisting. I said, no, let's let a year go by, and you can actually see what it's like not to be able to have the personal association in Vapa with your spiritual master. And then I think you should consider that you should have a spiritual master who's there, who can do that for you. So often this argument of mine is convincing, and people realize that they do need that and they want that. But I make it clear that I can't provide it. So anyway, he wrote me back after a year and said that he was convinced that we have a substantial relationship based on the books, and that every day he can find guidance and personal association. So that's very good for our relationship. And I'm assured also that the kind of relationship you'll have, it won't be superficial, just a formality, or that you'll feel, well, there were so many people there, I couldn't get to do any service for him, somebody else was cooking. Gee, now Madhu Mangal does all the cooking. And you can't even go in and clean his room. And this one was in the way, and that one was in the way. But everyone can have their own book and their own relationship. And you can also express that to me in our correspondence. So I've also, it's one of the treats for both of us that when we do come together, I'm thinking, oh, they've come all this way, what can I do? And I see that I can't do so much, and say, oh, they're really going to be disappointed. They spent all this money and they came here and wasn't there so much for them. So that other thing we do is try to have a correspondence by the, it's not email, but it's quick. And within a few days you get your letter back, and then you can write me again. So that's come to an end now. And if you're going to any letters I get now, I can't answer you on the spot. But it'll go through the other system. Better than China missionaries every 7 years. So that was intense. And exchanging letters like that. Well, we'll have some more meetings, disciples meetings in 1996. There'll be another one in April at Gita Nagari. I'll do a 5-course Prabhupada appreciation. That's the called Gita Nagari Institute. And then just after that, we'll have 5 days of disciples meetings in the cabin there, like we usually do. That's usually like in the morning, and then at night we meet every day. And then we'll do the same thing at Radhadesh in Europe. I'm not exactly sure of the dates. I know I have a commitment there for a seminar in early July. But exactly when the disciples' meetings, I'm still thinking about that. But it'll be around that time, maybe. And I hope to come to the various places. I really appreciate that so many devotees came from Ireland. And so I'll be coming to Ireland. And see you there in the various places. And all the other places too, mostly that you come from. I'm planning to make my usual rounds. Except this year I won't be going to the Caribbean. In the meetings that we have been having here, I've been stressing chanting and hearing, hoping that by repeating it and teaching it in novel ways from Prabhupada's books, that you will keep the impression of how important these two things are. Everything is there in Prabhupada's books. They're a combination of the actual verses spoken by Vyasadeva, which he translates so carefully to preserve that meaning, or spoken by Krishna, and then his Bhaktivedanta purports. So we get Krishna as he is, and then we get Krishna in his own words, and then we get Krishna as he is, as spoken by Prabhupada, who represents all the of previous acharyas. So I stress Prabhupada, reading Prabhupada's books, how it's sufficient. Someone wrote me, someone has left ISKCON, and he was criticizing the centennial celebration of Prabhupada and so much emphasis on Prabhupada, which he says may distort the fact that Prabhupada actually is a faithful carrier of the parampara. He's not something separate, some super being, but he represents the previous acharyas, and that's his main qualification. I admitted that sometimes the presentations about Prabhupada can be they can be presented in a fanatical way or a hype to present them. But there's nothing wrong in our glorifying him as a particular member of Sampradaya, especially in his 100th year or any time. And it's not wrong for us to concentrate on his books, because we don't lose sight of the fact that he is carrying the message of the previous acharyas. That's his glory, not to change it, add or subtract from it. But there's a special potency in his presentation for us and for the whole world, and that's a fact. So he has the Krishna Shakti, and we have the, you say, the Prabhupada Shakti, or we have the desire to praise him to those who want to hear. Nothing that you can knock somebody on the head about. So why should anyone disturb us or object as we glorify Prabhupada? And at least we tell the disciples in this movement that they can get everything about Krishna from his books. And the chanting, as he emphasized, I've been emphasizing, and I know you're all eager to hear this about chanting and how to improve chanting and what is the path of progressive chanting of Hare Krishna. So I'll continue to emphasize these things. Because the more we can make progress in them, actually, then all our other progress will unfold, our preaching ability and our steadiness, our being able to deal with the material world as we get a taste for chanting the holy name and hearing about Krishna in the books. I'll leave a little time for you to ask any questions, but the last thing I wanted to say was about being in Vrindavan. I wanted to urge you all to take advantage of being in Vrindavan. On one hand, this has been, for me, a time that I wasn't able to take advantage of being in Vrindavan. I don't think I've ever been so externally confined that I hardly have gone out of my room. I haven't gone in any parikram. Baladev invited me to see his house. I didn't even walk over there. But still, I feel very much that I'm in Vrindavan, and I haven't felt so. I may feel more when I leave, dissatisfied that I didn't really take advantage of my time. I know that I didn't, but still, I know that I have a taste. I was especially noticing it when I take rest and fall asleep, and then when I wake up, you know, and there's that moment you come from the unconscious world or the dream world, and you flash, where am I? And I say, oh, I'm in Vrindavan. And you feel so happy. Just so even from the room, I hear the birds, or I hear somebody smashing bricks. Seemingly not so pleasant sounds. But it's all so wonderful. Wonderful because of the elusive mystery of Krishna and Radha and their pastimes, and also it's wonderful because it's so much the home of all the devotees. at ISKCON, the way Prabhupada has welcomed us here. And you just feel like you're really in the cradle, not in an infantile sense, but I don't know, you just feel like you're so protected and no harm can come. Even what's the worst, death could come. Well, this is it. It had to come, and I'm in the right place, thank God. So what can go wrong in Vrindavan? It's so wonderful to be here. And I was noticing it by waking up, and said, I'm still here, I'm still in Vrindavan. So, but soon that's going to be, I won't be waking in Vrindavan. Then you have to make an adjustment. Okay, I'm not in Vrindavan. And then, so what about that? Well, then you make a date when you go to Vrindavan in India again, and then also the mental adjustment that, well, I'm serving Prabhupada, I'm serving Vrindavan, I'm thinking of Vrindavan, I'll chant Hare Krishna, I'll preach, I'm duty-bound, and so on. But here, no adjustments have to be made, you're just like the baby in the cradle, everything is alright, mother and father are there, and Vrindavan down. So, whatever, how many days you have left, 5, 10, 20, or whatever your ticket is, please take advantage of it. And don't commit offenses here. One devotee wrote me that, well, wherever I am, Vrindavan or in Europe, or wherever, my life is always a struggle to get through the day. I have to take care of my children and wash the clothes and everything, and I have to do that here as well as anywhere else. That's true. Wherever we go, we take our karma with us and so on. But so at least, even if it's not like you're feeling some sublime feelings that you may have anticipated, don't commit offenses here, and then you'll get the great benefit. And try, I always ask the devotees to try to make a kind of a theme or a project of each visit. Some of you are at crossroads in your life about your ashram or something else, or at least internally. We're always on some cutting edge. And so, here we are in Vrindavan, this is the place to be to get special blessings. And it's true that the prayers are rewarded here. And you can go through a very important change while you're here, if you take advantage of your time. Otherwise, it'll pass too quickly and you won't have taken advantage of it. So, I'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments?
Thank you. I'm going with your conception of what our service is and what our service is. Improvement and improvement and understanding that what you have been doing was wrong and not always right. And to go through that transformation to come improve at that point, which is wanted sometimes, you find that you encounter some real attachment to what you've been doing previously, and it might be mixed with, you know, what you thought was a spiritual desire, but it turned out to be something really basically bedrock bad thing, and you feel like you need help to overcome it. So,
well, I think the one thing is you have to really gain a conviction that what you were doing is wrong and not what the correction is. When you began to speak, I always try to think of if I have any experience of what you're asking. I remember the year, the Kartik year, I was here when we went through the change about giving up the some of the conceptions about zonal guru and things like that. So many senior members of the society were saying that something had to be changed, and I was among the few who were going to change or not. And so so one year I was here in Kartik, and not from political pressure, but from within myself, I began to think that actually I've been doing something wrong. But I didn't want to just yield to some outward force saying I'm doing something wrong. So that's the first thing. I remember I thought of changing, like you said, and I maybe felt some attachment to the old way. So one thing I did was I consulted Vaishnavas who I thought were knowledgeable about the topic. That was one point. And I got their consensus. And then I consulted with our God brothers who I trusted. So then when you get convinced and you pray to Krishna for some kind of realization that yes, this is right, and then you face, then what are the consequences of the change? What is that little, those little words that Jai Dwaita Maharaj coined, that the changes you had to go through first? Regret. Then?
Recognition.
So that was talking about recognition, more or less. Then regret. Then rectification. Then reunion. Regret will come naturally in any good soul person once he has recognition. Then you just have to take the steps. And I think then the attachment goes. It shouldn't be difficult to give up the attachment. Rather, you'll embrace the renunciation and see that it's good for you, and that it's any stepping down you have to do, you know, humbling position and so on. You feel this is good. It's really good for me, and I like to do. It's a great privilege to go through such a change, actually, such a humbling that I was wrong and now I'm. And I want to do the right thing. And, or I want to do the right thing, not necessarily emphasizing that one was wrong, but I have to change, or something's being imposed on me, just like with Lord Rama. Rama didn't do anything wrong, but now this thing was imposed on him. You have to give up the kingship that you were going to get tomorrow. Alright? I'll do that, Father. And others were saying, no, don't give it up, don't give it up. But to follow the truth was so pleasing to his heart that renunciation was gladly accepted. So you accept the hardships or the humbling position in the eyes of others or society that you had to go through a change and you were wrong or something like that. But if you actually have attachments, but it's actually wrong, then you have to just, you know, suffer the pinch and do it. But I think it's so important that we have the recognition or the conviction. A man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. But if you're convinced, then it should be easy. So that emphasis should be on that. Now, what does Krishna actually want me to do? And then from yourself, and what can I respond to this? Can I actually do it? Give me the strength to, if I can't do it in a super human way, respond to this. Please let me at least not stonewall it, but I'll do whatever I can. And then I'll get gradually more and more help. I'll show you my intention is to do it, but it's asking a lot. I'll do the best I can. And then our spiritual master usually says, that's all I ask, is that just that you try. But if we're rebellious and defiant, even when we get so much good evidence and confirmation just because of attachment, then it's blind and ignorant. So we pray that we can all go through such changes. Yeah, Vrindavan is a good place for that. Because it emphasizes what's actually spiritual, what's actually good for you going back to Godhead. This is the place for going back to Godhead. So when we come here and we're faced with, well, I'm really into something which really isn't progressive for going back to Godhead. I'm in Vrindavan. What an incongruity. I say I come here, I want to go back to Godhead, but I'm attached to something else. I have to give it up. It's more pressure to do so here, or more natural to do so here. So then while you're here, I'm saying, you know, you make your prayers, you gather your conviction, and start the project as much as possible so it's underway, and then when you leave Vrindavan, and then the other modes are there, that, well, going back to Godhead is not the only thing, but you'll say, no, I was in Vrindavan, and I got this conviction, and I'm doing this thing, and it's right. And then you'll have a momentum. And then when the momentum runs out, you can come back to Vrindavan. And go to Mayapur first is a good insight. Information. There, Lord Chaitanya is very magnanimous, and it won't seem quite so heavy or impossible, or that much is expected of you. And then when you feel more at ease there, yeah, well, Lord Chaitanya will accept me. It's going to be all right. I'm going to make it. Then you go to Vrindavan. If it tightens up, you'll remember that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, it's all right. Just chant Hare Krishna, he says. Not so much as expected of you. Don't worry.
I know that you've spoken about this before, and you've touched on it, but I'm just wondering if you can, how is it difficult to have a where you don't lose the Vrindavan realization and your consciousness of the disconnect, and you can continue to rest. Very frustrating when I myself, I feel really getting somewhere that I want to hear.
Yeah, it's a common feeling, experience. Well, my own experience is a true one, I think, and you'll recognize it as one that you've experienced. I remember one year I had it vividly, but it's always sort of the same. Well, I'm expressing something positive here, that I had some good realization of Vrindavan. It was in a Kartik time. And I think it was that same time that I'm referring to when I wrote the Guru Reform Notebook. So I was really charged with things. And the next place I went was Ireland. And we got there, and the weather was so dismal, as usual. It was just raining and raining and raining. It was so dark. And the buildings are all dark. And I thought, why have I come here? And I still had my reticules with all the flowers in them from Vrindavan, and as if that was the only life. But then it came to me kind of a positive feeling that, there's only one reason to be here, and that's to preach. And actually, there's like a lift in the opportunities to preach in Dublin as compared to Vrindavan. You know, there are so many people on the street who are ready to hear Krishna consciousness. And the other is there, like, oh, it's just the Bob. There's no Bob. It's just pubs and ignorant people. And where's Vrindavan? That Vrindavan, Radha Krishna, where people know about Krishna and Radha. Where he's just coming here, we passed a man. He's got one of those shovels, an Indian shovel, and he's digging. Radhi. When we went by, he didn't even like look up or anything, but just to recognize us, he said that. It's just amazing that a worker is greeting you, Radhi. What labor or whatever, you know, be even friendly or say Radhi. So where is that Vrindavan? But there's so much preaching opportunity. So it's a different thing. Now I was feeling one thing and going through changes, but now I come here and I had, so the preaching will sustain us then. And it's the only thing that will protect us. So, it's not bad to be in Vrindavan and then go back. If you you have to dovetail or see how that's going to be utilized, that auspiciousness, the change you went through. Otherwise, the logic would be that what I'm doing here is Vrindavan Bhajan. I've established my Vrindavan Bhajan. Now I'm chanting 64 rounds or whatever it is. And so that's what I must do. And then when I go to the West, I can't do it. So I fall down from my Vrindavan standard. If that was all you did, was develop bhajan here and forget about everything back there. Yeah, then when you turn to it again, oh no, I lost it all. But you're not supposed to just do that, build up Vrindavan bhajan. Now, as I say, work out some, you know, what am I going to do? Should I get married or not? Should I continue in this position or not? Or this I start some project, I go back to my Prabhudatta Desh with my Vrindavan heart or consciousness or resolve. So that it must be connected. You must be prepared for it, that, you know, now I'm going to leave, it's going to be a culture shock to go back. And things are going to seem tasteless because externally it's all so horrible compared to the softness I've developed here. But I'll be ready for it because I've made this resolve, I've made this plan to carry out in the West. And I told you that I really treasure that little memory. I was glad I wrote it in my diary. I put it in the 1970s diary that after one festival we went on a walk, and as we walked, even at that moment, the buses were filling up with devotees. We used to travel then, everyone traveled together. All the luggage was being strapped on the buses and devotees were getting ready to go, and Prabhupada walked by, some of us with him. He didn't say anything about it. But near the end of the walk I said, "So today Prabhupada, the devotees are going back to the West." And he said, "Yes. And this is our real purpose, this is our preaching. This is the real thing, to go back now. And you must learn to keep Vrindavan in your heart." So that's the idea. And so things that do fall away, that's maybe inevitable. Just give you a taste to remind you that you do have to come back.